Looking ahead to Thursday, chance of rain, especially in the afternoon, highs in the mid to upper 50s.
Good morning. In Western Pennsylvania, steel, oil, and gas are industries with a long tradition and deep ties to the region. We'll hear how these businesses help determine votes. That's this hour of Morning Edition from NPR News. Donald Trump continues to attack what he calls the enemy within. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm A. Martinez. An NPR investigation finds he's made more than 100 threats to investigate, prosecute, and jail perceived opponents, including private citizens. Also, Trump likes to show up to UFC events. Find out how his long relationship with the sports league goes beyond just enjoying the fights and is key to reaching his political base. It's Tuesday, October 22nd. Major League Baseball's all-time single-season record holder for hits, Ichiro Suzuki, is 51 years old today. News is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Vice President Kamala Harris campaigned in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin yesterday, joined by Republican and former Congresswoman Liz Cheney. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports Harris is working to win over moderate Republicans and disenchanted Trump voters.
In Oakland County, Michigan, Harris told reporters she's been happy with how people have shown up at her events with Cheney.
They know, regardless of who they voted for in the last election and the party with which they're registered to vote, on some issues, we just have to all be Americans and put party aside.
Harris has been emphasizing that one of the main differences between her and her opponent, former President Trump, is that she will uphold the Constitution and she says he will not. She also criticized Trump for not supporting an increase to the minimum wage. Trump over the weekend was asked about the issue while he served customers at a McDonald's and he skirted the question. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
Later today, Harris will sit for an interview with NBC News. Meanwhile, Donald Trump will campaign near Miami this morning at an event with Latino leaders. Last night, he met Christian leaders near Charlotte, North Carolina. Trump mentioned the assassination attempt against him this past summer.
My faith took on new meaning on July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania, where I was knocked to the ground, essentially, by what seemed like a supernatural hand. And I would like to think that God saved me for a purpose, and that's to make our country greater than ever before.
Trump will hold another rally later today in Greensboro, North Carolina. Texas lawmakers are reviewing the evidence used to convict a death row inmate. Last week, Robert Roberson was temporarily spared from execution when Texas lawmakers subpoenaed him to testify in a hearing. But he did not appear yesterday. The Texas Attorney General said Roberson could testify remotely, but the lawmakers and Roberson's lawyers disagreed, saying that he has autism and faces challenges communicating. The Texas Newsroom's Blaise Ganey reports on the testimony Texas lawmakers did hear yesterday about the case.
Roberson was convicted and sentenced to death for allegedly killing his 2-year-old daughter, Nikki, thought to have died from shaken baby syndrome. Testimony from medical experts suggests she likely died of complications from pneumonia. Despite this, his execution was still set until the Texas House intervened, asking him to testify. Lawmakers heard from Terry Compton, one of the original 12 jurors in the case that led to Roberson's sentencing.
Knowing what you know now, do you believe Robert Roberson murdered his daughter, Nikki?
No.
How strongly do you feel about that?
100%.
The impact of the hearing on Roberson's fate remains uncertain. I'm Blaise Ganey in Austin.
This is NPR. Authorities in Lebanon say at least 13 people have been killed after Israeli strikes around a hospital in Beirut last night. This morning, militants in southern Lebanon fired a barrage of rockets into parts of Israel, including Tel Aviv. The Israeli military has been targeting Hezbollah militants who have been firing at Israel. This comes as Secretary of State Antony Blinken makes his 11th trip to the Middle East. A tech venture is looking at a new way to identify every human on Earth. It's doing this with a device called the Orb that scans people's irises. NPR's Derek Kerr explains.
WorldCoin says it has already scanned the eyes of 7 million people. The idea is to use eye scans instead of government IDs or fingerprints to verify people's identities. At the venture's first major event in San Francisco, executive Rich Hiley says to scan everyone on Earth, it needs more orbs in the hands of more people.
Lots more orbs, probably on the order of 1,000 times more orbs than we have today.
The venture has raised privacy and security concerns for some governments, and countries including Kenya and South Korea have even temporarily suspended WorldCoin from operating. WorldCoin says it's not slowing down, and now it changed its name from WorldCoin to just World. Dara Kerr, NPR News.
The Players Union for the WNBA has opted out of its current contract with the league. Both sides will now bargain over a new contract. The union says it is seeking higher salaries for WNBA players after a year with record attendance and viewership. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Nature Conservancy, working across oceans and isles to cut carbon emissions, protect lands and waters, and support local communities for a future where people and nature thrive. Nature.org/solutions.
Good morning. This is Marianne calling from south of Langby. I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoy listening to Border News Roundup with Marshall Helberger. We listen to you every morning faithfully.
Hi, this is Mark calling from Hibbing. I attended the Green Cheese Picnic last Saturday and had a really great time. I want to thank everybody.
Hi, this is Ruth from Grand Rapids. I wanted to thank you for the series that you did on abuse.
Hello, this is Mike calling from Grand Rapids. I just want to say I do appreciate the commentary I just heard, both from a DFL and GOP point of view.
Hi, this is Adam from Bovee, Minnesota. Noticed up by Marcel, there were some gray jays or Canada jays eating on a deer carcass gut pile. Listening to Harry Hutchins, he was talking about having not seen them.
Hear the voices of your friends and neighbors on KAXE KBXE, member-supported radio in northern Minnesota.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
I'm Layla Faldin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep at WHYY in Philadelphia. Michelle Martin and I are both in Pennsylvania this week listening to voters in a vital state. And some of those voters have experience that is relevant to the issues of the campaign. It can be hard to understand why some people vote as they do, especially if they vote differently than you do. But their jobs offer clues. And that was certainly true for a man we drove to see in the hills outside Pittsburgh.
Little wood frame house with a Trump flag and an American flag. Trump signs by the side of the road. The signs were on our way to our destination. Penico.
Yeah, that's the company. This is the wastewater disposal facility.
Our editor, H.J. Mai, drove us to this bit of the fracking industry. The drilling technique uses high-pressure water to break oil and gas out of underground rock. Dirty water comes back up with the fuel, and trucks bring that wastewater here for disposal. The driver hooks up a hose, the water is filtered, and then powerful pumps plunge it to a final resting place 1,900 feet underground. This facility is where we met Ben Wallace of Penico.
So you are in ground zero of the Marcellus Shale boom. You know, some of the most prolific wells in the United States of America are within 10 miles of this site.
You spot the derricks as you drive around, although this region is mostly fields and forest.
This is kind of an argument I give to environmental activists all the time. Show me the industry. You know, you are in the Saudi Arabia of natural gas right now. You are standing here, and you don't see the industry anywhere.
Wallace has complicated views of his industry's safety. Due to new regulations in recent years, frackers can no longer just dump the salty wastewater into a creek. And Wallace takes pride in the double-lined pipes and the fail-safe switches that shut down the operation at any sign of trouble. Yet he's also exasperated by residents and activists who frequently protest and sue.
When we started 40 years ago, 50 years ago, the process of getting a well permit was about a one-page application.
Today, he says, it's hundreds of pages.
And the permit for this facility, probably $250,000.
Why do you think people get so upset about this particular business?
It's scary. It's unknown. It's the boogeyman.
Is it also part of it climate change? They just don't want you to be doing this business at all because of climate change?
I don't accept the notion of man-made climate change.
His rejection of the scientific consensus on climate puts Wallace in line with much of the Republican Party. Wallace insists he does not vote on oil and gas, but on what he considers American ideals.
The right of self-determination, the right to be a Christian nation, the right to determine your own outcome, the right to be free of government interference.
But it's fair to say that his politics are consistent with his work, and he's running a political action committee that has raised money for billboards supporting Donald Trump. Kamala Harris, like Trump, says she doesn't oppose fracking, although Wallace believes that in the many details of regulation, his candidate would be more supportive.
Yes, serving number 167.
We met another voter in a Pittsburgh area bakery. She's said to come to Oakmont, just a few minutes away from the fracking wells, but politically very different. Kamala Harris signs are much more numerous here. Amid the cakes and donuts that seem to be the size of your head, we ordered coffee.
You think that's your mocha?
Might be, I don't know.
Rose Faust says she spent close to 20 years in a factory that makes ceramics.
It's a ceramic insulator that is in appliances or, say, your car. There's tiny pieces that go inside of gas ovens.
And how did you get into this line of work?
I got a divorce and needed a full-time job instead of staying home and being a full-time mom.
Mass-producing ceramics is not an easy job.
I worked on the kiln for years until my body could not take it anymore, but that's lifting and loading the parts to go into the kiln and then come out is how I started. That's when I started there. I needed the money, so I'd work weekends, and that's where the money was at because you're getting paid time and a half.
How hot is it in that room?
It gets probably around 110 degrees.
Eventually, from the heavy work, she needed surgery on both elbows. And that's one way her work life intersects with her politics. She supports unions and had a union job with health insurance, though it's getting more expensive.
They paid all of our health insurance, and then it went south after that. They started adding, you know, it onto our contract where we pay a certain portion of it. Now it's pretty much out of control like everywhere else.
Though she finally had to stop working at the ceramics plant, she says she lasted long enough to get all three of her girls through college. And now she has a job leading the union that used to represent her. This time of year, that means she's engaged with a lot of politics, knocking on doors of union members to encourage them to vote.
The best part for me, I think, is talking to the older people. The people that are retired seem to have more common sense.
What do you mean by that?
They take their union and their retirement and everything seriously. They'll say, hey, we're Democrat no matter what. Like, we know how we got our jobs. We know who, you know, took care of us all these years. And pensions, I think, are the biggest thing.
Faust reminds her fellow union members that President Biden signed a law designed to protect their pensions. And it only passed the Senate when Vice President Harris cast a tie-breaking vote. What do you think about Harris?
I think she can bring peace back to this country, I hope. I mean, it just, because I see so much division.
How do you feel about the direction of the country right now?
It's definitely scary.
Faust says some union voters dismiss her door-to-door sales pitch. Some support Trump and talk about the dangers of immigrants and asylum seekers, which Rose Faust says she doesn't understand.
All they're trying to do is escape war and what they're going through and want better for themselves. Isn't that what we all want? But people want to turn them all away.
She feels sympathy because of her experience. She was born to a troubled family and says she spent most of her childhood in foster care.
I would open my home to anybody. Somebody opened their home to me. years and years ago. Had that not happened, where would I have been? I could have been on the streets too. And you can't call somebody a thief or a murderer unless they actually did something.
Sometimes she doubts the people she meets are drawing on their experience.
Because you'll hear somebody and they're repeating the exact same thing that you've heard on a commercial. And it's like, you need to stop watching Fox News or something, you know? But I can't say that. I'm there to listen.
To listen and share her own experience in hopes of persuading her neighbors when she can. Michelle Martin and I are listening to the stories of voters here in Pennsylvania this week, and tonight we are at a public event at WHYY in Philadelphia.
With just 2 weeks until Election Day, former President Donald Trump has been escalating his attacks on his political rivals and what he calls, quote, the enemy within, unquote.
Now, an NPR investigation has found that Trump has made more than 100 threats to investigate, prosecute, jail, or otherwise punish his perceived opponents, including private citizens.
NPR's investigative correspondent Tom Dreisbach has been looking into this. Good morning. Good morning. So, we know former President Trump has talked about, quote, locking people up for a long time. What's new about what you found here? Right. And, you know, Trump's allies say, come on, this is just campaign rhetoric. The media is overhyping this. So we wanted to find out just how often does Trump do this? And we looked at rally speeches, interviews, social media posts just since 2022 when he was preparing for this campaign. And that's how we found more than 100 examples. More than 100 examples. Who exactly is he targeting? Well, at the top of the list are his political opponents. He says if he wins on day one, he will appoint a special prosecutor to investigate President Joe Biden and Biden's family. He says Vice President Kamala Harris should be prosecuted. He's reposted calls for former President Barack Obama, former Congresswoman Liz Cheney to face military tribunals. And then he's also pushed for prosecutions and arrests of people involved in the criminal and civil cases against them, prosecutors, judges, even a courthouse staffer. And in one case, he floated the idea of prosecuting a member of the Georgia grand jury that indicted him for election interference. Okay, so this goes well beyond just politicians, including private citizens like this jury you just described, but also journalists. What has Trump said about them? Well, he said journalists who refuse to give up their sources should go to jail. He says CBS and NBC should be investigated and lose their broadcast licenses because he didn't like their news coverage. He's also attacked people who criticize or protest the Supreme Court. This is from a rally this September.
These people should be put in jail the way they talk about our judges and our justices trying to get them to sway their vote.
I mean, what you're describing, Tom, is pretty frightening. And all of this obviously raises the question, could former President Trump actually do this? Well, there's been a norm that's generally accepted for decades that the White House does not direct investigations by the Justice Department. But it is not the law. And at the end of the day, the president does control the Justice Department. Of course, there are guardrails. Judges can refuse to sign warrants. They can dismiss charges. But investigations alone, legal experts told me, can be terrifying, cost a ton of money in legal bills. And there's this concern that just the threat of a prosecution can make someone say, if opposing the president gets me investigated, is it really worth the risk?
So a chilling effect there. What does your reporting tell you about whether Trump would actually take action on these threats?
Yeah, an analysis from an NYU law professor found a dozen cases from Trump's first term where he pressured the Justice Department to investigate, and they did follow through. And I also talked to multiple people who said they're preparing for the worst case in case Trump wins. Stephanie Grisham was a press secretary in Trump's White House, but she now says he's unfit for office.
I just know that once he's in office with no reason to worry about reelection and only the most fervent, loyal people surrounding him, that he will absolutely make sure his enemies pay for what he perceives to be their crimes.
And Grisham told me she's already saving money, getting ducks in a row in case he's subjected to, say, an investigation or IRS audit. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for the Republican Party responded to our reporting by saying that Harris is the threat to democracy. That's NPR's Tom Dreisbach. Thanks so much for your reporting, Tom. Thank you. Tom will have more reporting on his investigation later today on All Things Considered. Listen live on the NPR app or on the radio. This is NPR News.
It is 6:19. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr. Coming up, more from Morning Edition, and then John Latimer and Heidi Holton will bring you student phonology talkbacks before 7 o'clock. We've received support from Grand Rapids State Bank, proudly serving the Grand Rapids area for 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. We've got a chance of showers and thunderstorms today, high 65 to 70, winds from the southwest 10 to 15, gusting higher, lows tonight 32 to 35, and then for Wednesday, sunny and highs in the upper 40s, breezy northwest winds 10 to 20, gusting higher. We receive support from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital in Grand Rapids, offering rewarding careers in healthcare. Open positions at granditasca.org/careers. Grand Itasca, where you're treated like family. We also thank Clocko Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, marking 7 years of brewing classic German and British-style beers, as well as modern IPAs and sours, thanking their customers during their anniversary the last week of October by featuring deals at the tap room. More info at clockobrewing.com. You can answer our question of the week. What food or foods remind you of home? It is the Come Home to KAXE Fall Membership Drive. You can text in your answer 218-326-1234, or you can text the word donate to that same number, and you'll get a link to our online donation form. Your support helps us tell the stories of Northern Minnesota. Thanks so much.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Focus Features, presenting Conclave, based on the novel, starring Ralph Fiennes, Stanley Tucci, John Lithgow, and Isabella Rossellini. Directed by Edward Berger, in theaters everywhere this Friday. From Subaru, Subaru has donated more than $60 million to support the adoption, rescue, transport, and health of more than 504,000 animals. Learn more at Subaru.com/pets. From the NPR Wine Club, bringing people wines inspired by NPR shows. Whether purchasing a few bottles or joining the club, every purchase supports NPR. Available to adults 21 or older. NPRWineClub.org. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm A. Martinez. In America, voting in elections is encouraged. It's billed as a civic duty. An organization with millions of members is taking that obligation a step further by requiring its members to vote, or else they could lose their membership and the financial benefits that come along with it. Legal scholars say they've never seen a policy like this. Here's NPR's Frank Langfitt.
The Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, known as NACA, is devoted to helping working-class people buy homes and get them very good deals on mortgages. NACA also wants members to be civically engaged. But CEO Bruce Marks says when NACA asks members to vote, sometimes they don't.
What we found is that you can do a lot of canvassing, but still people don't go and vote.
So this year, NACA told its 3.7 million members they had to.
We're not saying that people vote for a particular candidate. We're saying that there's so much at stake in this election that you have to have your voice heard.
Mark says NACA won't kick out members this year if they don't cast a ballot, but it might in future federal elections.
Obviously, this is a work in progress, but we're going to be looking to see whether you voted.
Which NACA can track because it's public record. This new policy raises questions.
I imagine some people might look at this and say, gosh, you're really kind of putting the screws on these people who need an affordable mortgage.
No, because it's really education. We have the opportunities we have today because of people who fought and died in the civil rights movement. You know, by not voting, you're giving other people your vote.
The vast majority of NACA members are working class and people of color. Mark says NACA is going all out this fall.
We are calling the 874,000 NACA members into seven battleground states. So each member is being called directly.
Mark says that includes more than 400,000 members in the key swing state of Georgia. But these three election experts aren't sure the organization's new policy is legal.
I think it's troubling.
I think there could be blowback from that.
I haven't heard of membership organizations threatening to withhold membership before.
That's Rick Hassan, who directs the Safeguarding Democracy Project at the UCLA School of Law. David Becker, who runs the Center for Election Innovation and Research. And Justin Levitt, who served in the Biden White House as Senior Policy Advisor for Democracy and Voting Rights. Levitt says a particular part of the law might apply here.
There's a long-standing portion of the criminal code, been around for almost a century, that criminalizes spending money to prompt someone to vote or to withhold their vote. or to vote for a particular candidate.
Of course, NACA isn't paying people to vote, but Levitt notes it could take away something of value, which Hassan says could be a problem. He cites an example from 2008.
Ben and Jerry's want to give free ice cream away to anyone who voted, and that turns out to be illegal in a federal election. So they had to change their promotion after I called it out to provide free ice cream to everyone, just because we don't want to induce people to vote for a material gain.
When I mentioned these concerns to Marks, he defended the policy.
We feel we're, you know, absolutely on firm, you know, legal grounds, just like any other organization, you know, the Elks Club, anything like that. They all have requirements for participation in a voluntary organization. It's all we're doing. Same thing.
Of course, membership in the Elks won't get you a low-cost mortgage. NPR reached out to several NACA members. Warren Gamble said NACA allowed him to buy a home in Atlanta that he otherwise wouldn't have been able to afford. He likes the new policy.
If you want to be part of NACA, you want to get all the benefits of all the hard work that everybody's doing, then, you know, you need to come to the table and do your part.
My name is Sylvia White, who's Black. That's what I always say.
White lives in Arizona. She thinks if NACA enforces its new voting rules, it could alienate some members, especially those who don't like their options at the ballot box.
There may be a candidate that they don't care for either side. If that's the case, you know, why are you trying to make me vote or do something that I don't want to do?
Mark says the response inside NACA has been overwhelmingly positive. As for outside criticism, Mark says that's inevitable when you try to have an impact. He calls it a badge of honor. Frank Langford, NPR News, Washington.
A Muslim cleric accused of being behind a failed 2016 coup in his native Turkey has died. Fethullah Gulen was 83 years old. He was once a powerful figure in Turkey until he ran afoul of the government and spent the last decades of his life here in the U.S. in self-imposed exile. NPR's Jackie Northam reports.
Fethullah Gulen went from small-town Islamist preacher to create a vast global social network known as Hizmet, the Turkish word for service. It opened hospitals and schools in dozens of countries. Millions of people followed its particular vision of Islam, including some in influential positions in Turkey's secular government. Soner Çaptay with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy says Gulen helped Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan when he first came to power in 2003 and was worried about the country's secular military launching a coup.
Gulen reached out to a vulnerable Erdogan by providing his network of judges, prosecutors, cops, journalists who were aligned with his mission of fighting their own war against Turkey's secularist political system.
Çaptay says that alliance began to unravel around 2010. By this time, Gulen had been living in self-exile in Pennsylvania for a decade, but still wielded influence in Turkey. In 2016, the relationship finally ruptured after an attempted coup against Erdogan's government. More than 250 people were killed when tanks rolled into Istanbul and fighter aircraft targeted government buildings. Tens of thousands of people were rounded up. Many were purged from their government jobs. Erdogan said Gulen was behind the rebellion, a charge he denied in a 2017 interview with NPR.
But if I were to even entertain that idea, if anyone among those soldiers had called me and told me of their plan, I would have told them, "You are committing murder."
Erdogan deemed Gulen's movement a terrorist organization, and hundreds of companies with links to Hizmet were closed. Turkey tried to have Gulen extradited, but the U.S. never agreed. Gulen died at a Pennsylvania hospital. Jackie Northam, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
For years, Donald Trump has threatened his critics with prosecution or even jail time, and some are warning that a second Trump presidency could make those threats a reality.
He will absolutely make sure his enemies pay for what he perceives to be their crimes.
A closer look at the former president's calls to investigate his rivals on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered. It's coming up this afternoon here on KAXE. We're member-supported radio in northern Minnesota. It is almost 6:30. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. We are upbeat.
We are. We're ready to rock and roll this morning.
No one needs to know what we've been griping about, although we'll get to it because the microphones are on and we get to do that. It is day two of the Come Home to KAXE membership drive. It is fall. It's when you start to feel that come home kind of feeling. I mean, yesterday was not a good example. It was very warm yesterday. But, you know, when you do your first loaf of bread for the fall. Or, you know, we're asking people what foods remind them of home.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure what foods, you know, but thinking back, of course, homemade bread. Yeah. That was something my mother did three times a week.
Yeah.
But, I have my mother's macaroni and cheese recipe, and every once in a while I crack that out and
nice
and sort of abuse myself with fats and cheeses.
That's John Latimer. I'm Heidi Holton. It is day two. Janet is here. We are asking for your support. We're celebrating phenology. We do this each and every Tuesday. We celebrate nature. It is now 41 years you've been doing phenology.
Oh, my God. No wonder I feel so old and tired. It isn't the phenology. It's the incidental work that I do along the way. But 41 years. Yeah, yes. I started when I was 34.
Wow. Wow. We can't thank you enough for your longtime support. We come to you throughout 3 times a year. Our members are what pays the bills around here. You can imagine as you look at your own bills, how much running 2 radio stations with 2 towers, the light bills might be or the electricity bills to bring you this kind of broadcast every day where you get more connected. How do you do it? You can text the word donate right now to 218-326-1234. You can call that phone number. The other thing we need to tell you is we are so grateful that there is a match on the table. Its intention is to get us off to a great start right away so the morning is successful. For the next, if we get 5 pledges.
5 more pledges.
5 members.
Five.
Okay. In the next hour and a half, we get an extra 500 thrown in. Thanks to longtime anonymous is not the right word. We know who they are. Confidential.
Yeah, there
they
you
don't
go.
Want their name thrown out there, but they want to make sure that phenology
these folks have
to
been
thrive.
Instrumental in phenology over the years. They have been oh so helpful. You must remember that my degree is in economics, not science. And these people were kind enough along the way to grab me by the hand and give me a dope slap and say, "Hey, here's what's really going on." So, yeah, thank you so much for your generosity. And to the rest of you who are learning as I'm learning and maybe even learning in front of me, you know, I know there are some of you who get up early on Tuesday mornings and come in and listen and are waiting to hear new news from the world of nature. And maybe it's time for you to jump on the phone right now and wake up Janet. She walked in.
Yep.
And she looked like she was awake, but I know when I walked in here, well, Steve dragged me in. I was trying to walk. So give us a call and get us off to a good start, and let's claim the money that has been so generously donated. For this reason, to spur you into action early in the morning. I know for a lot of you, life doesn't start until the coffee's done. And coffee should be getting ready, should be percolating right as we speak. So
you're listening right now because you know what you're going to be getting. You're going to be delighted. You're going to learn. You're going to hear the voices of kids from around the state telling us what they are seeing, what they are learning. We need you to step up right now. Just that next one. You can text the word donate to 1-800-326-1234. We heard from Kim last week. She said, listening to the morning show motivates me to get on the road so I don't miss out on anything. It's great.
Yeah, well, if you're on the road this morning, don't. Maybe you've got one of those hands-free things in your car.
Yep, just talk to your car. Just tell them to call KAXE. And
I have talked to my car since 1961, which was the first year car that I owned. But I even talked to my father's 1956 car, but. Oftentimes, well, until the last 4 years, the car hasn't listened to me or it talked back.
Oh.
But now it does.
Now it does. Yeah. There we go. We're looking for your pledge of support right now. It is important to get off to a great start on this Tuesday. It's October 22nd. We've got some great ways to thank you. Pledge your support $20 a month or above. You get the new Sounds Like Home KAXE t-shirt. Call now, 218-326-1234. We've got National Native News coming up. We promise we're not going to talk too long, but I think we do need to talk about the Minnesota Lynx. That'll be coming up in a bit. But first, rain is likely today with possible thunderstorms.
Wow.
Mostly cloudy, temperatures 63 to 69. And then temperatures will fall this afternoon. We'll see 30 to 35 overnight.
I had 65 at my house this morning when I got up. I walked outside and it was warm and it was hazy. I could see the moon and a couple of stars, but it wasn't a clear sky. Otherwise, it would probably have been a few degrees colder, but it was nice and warm. Took a little bike ride. Me and the dog went for a run. Mm-hmm. She ran. I rode. Works better that way. If she rode and I ran, we wouldn't have gotten out of the driveway. We would have, I'd have been laying on the ground just gasping. But yeah, so don't talk to your car. Talk to us.
Yeah.
Unless you're telling your car to call us, in which case, talk to your car and tell your car to call us and let Janet know that you're listening and that you want to help us claim this extra $500. So
yeah, the next five, and we get to unlock that 500. Thanks to our longtime dedicated confidential members. We really appreciate it, and we can't wait to hear from you this morning. We're getting our morning off to a great start because you are going to get yours off to a great start. You're going to make that call. You're going to feel great that you are part of this whole network of people who care about nature and about noting what is different. We're going to learn about the program later in about an hour. Charlie Mitchell will be joining us. I don't think people really understand the extent. Last week we talked to you as you were on the road visiting schools and stuff. But the extent of the connection to the schools in our region, not just Tuesday mornings, but throughout the week and helping out in classrooms and really making a difference for the future. We've got, we're going to listen to the poem we got from last year.
Well, that'll make me cry.
I know. There was a lot of crying last year because 40 years and 41 now means that you've affected a lot of people who are now adults and who are now working in the field of nature. And there can be no better gift, I don't think, to you than to know this. So
it was long a dream of mine to have a network of schools across the state and to have them report in because, you know, phenology is all local. What happens in your yard may not be happening in my yard for genetic reasons, for climatological reasons, for whatever reasons. It's not the same everywhere. And getting a chance to hear the voices of children who are doing the same as you and I, and that is just being observant, it brings me a great deal of joy.
We can't wait to hear from you this morning. 218-326-1234. Were you someone who watched the Lynx the other night, two nights ago? I don't even want to think about it, but you came in angry and ready to go yourself on this one. First, I want to thank Watermark Arts Center in Bemidji. They're at 505 Bemidji Avenue. The galleries are open to the public. Their on-site retail store features regionally created art, home decor, and handcrafted gifts. More info, watermarkartcenter.org. We were robbed.
Well, I used to, Years ago, some good friends of mine organized a bocce tournament every year on Labor Day weekend. And every year there was a big drunken bacchanalia with lots of bocce played. And one year, the team that won did not drink. And we put an asterisk on the turn on the trophy because and down below made a note that they had not had any alcoholic beverages, and we figured that was cheating. And to be honest with you, I think not that New York cheated, but they certainly had the advantage of some more than generous refereeing. I think that the tournament, the trophy should have an asterisk on it that says, you know, with the help of the sixth man, in this case, they were wearing stripes. I thought the referees were a bit tilted to one side.
They were talking about Sunday night's game. Minnesota, it went into, I mean, you couldn't ask for better, though, in terms of the popularity of the WNBA to go five games and in the tournament. Next year, it'll be seven. They're going to move into that. But yeah, it was a disappointment. There really probably should not have even been any overtime.
There should not. The game was over. Except for a phantom foul.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in a game that looked more like a football game than a basketball game, to call that foul at the very last 5 seconds of the game was really a travesty. I mean, it was not by any stretch of the imagination a foul, at least gauged on the previous 59 minutes of play. Well, pardon me, 39 minutes of play.
Right.
So.
There we go. Did you watch the Minnesota Lynx? Did you have the similar thoughts? I got a really angry message from Fred yesterday. Fred Friedman, very upset as well. So you'll be hearing about it this Friday on the sports page. Conversations about the culture and the state of Minnesota and what's going on. We've got some great information right now at our website, kaxc.org. Megan Buffington putting together information about the Minnesota teams that are headed to state tournament bound, especially some of the nine-man football teams from our region are there. And you can check that out at kaxc.org. We need to hear from you this morning. Thank you for being with us. The number to call is 218-326-1234. Grab that t-shirt, brand new t-shirt, Sounds Like Home. When you pledge your support, $20 a month or above, text the word donate right now to 218-326-1234.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Washington State Office that helps secure grant funding for outdoor projects has hired someone to coordinate with Native American tribes. Steve Jackson has more.
Spokane tribal citizen Don Pullen is the Washington State Recreation and Conservation Office's first tribal affairs director. Pullen has a varied resume working with the Spokane tribe and recently served as well as a tribal liaison for the Washington State Patrol. In her new role, Pullen says she'll have a chance to work closely with Washington tribes to find funding for various projects.
I'm going to take my lead from the tribe. Like, what does the tribe need from me? And how can we communicate and collaborate in consultation and work together and ensure that, you know, tribal sovereignty is upheld?
She says tribal priorities include salmon recovery projects, which are a big part of the state agency's mission. Additionally, she says tribes could benefit from funding for recreation projects such as trails and parks. Pullen is studying a list of past grants the Recreation and Conservation Office secured for tribes to determine what future projects could benefit from funding. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Last week, a signing ceremony took place in Anchorage, Alaska, between tribes and federal agencies to work together to address the collapse of salmon. And as KNBA's Jill Freitas reports, the history-making agreement was a trailblazing event.
It was held in downtown Anchorage during the Alaska Tribal Unity Gathering.
More than 2 years ago, Department of the Interior leaders heard from Alaska Native tribes about the salmon collapses, their impacts on communities and cultures, and the need for immediate and lasting action by the federal government. More than 100 tribes, as well as federal agencies, discussed co-stewardships, where both traditional knowledge and Western science were brought to the table to come up with a solution for the devastating impacts to the salmon population. During the hour-long discussion, multiple people spoke of the long road hundreds of tribes and communities face. Vivian Corthias is from Mimonic and is the chief executive officer of the Association of Village Council Presidents. She is on the Gravel to Gravel board and says that with the combined forces of the tribes in Alaska, as well as federal agencies, they are sure to make a big impact.
If we had an initiative where there was only one leader, either the feds or in our case, just the tribes do it alone, it wouldn't work. We know that. Those of us that are sitting up here are working on behalf of every single community, every single tribe, every single family.
Corthias says that in recent years, the consistent decline in salmon becomes more devastating each year.
What I believe is that this is really a true humanitarian crisis. It's unthinkable that we have the third largest river, the Yukon River, in this nation, and we have no salmon to put away. It's mind-boggling.
Brian Ridley is chief of the Tanana Chiefs Conference.
It's really a lot about salmon habitat restoration, and so trying to make sure that the salmon have good areas to spawn in across Alaska, and that we have a healthy environment for the salmon to be able to come back to, in an effort to try to get them to come back to how they once were 20, 30, 40 years ago.
The board will meet regularly throughout the next few years to discuss more solutions for the salmon crisis. In Anchorage, I'm Jill Freitas.
And October 21st marks the 12th annual Native American College Fair. Hosted at the Minnesota History Center, more than 40 colleges from across the U.S. will be on site to discuss higher ed opportunities with Native students and their families. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
It's National Native News on member-supported KAXE. It's our fall. Come home to KAXE membership drive. We need you now. 218-326-1234. The gong is our tradition as we thank longtime members Marin and Petter Gallis. Thank you so much. Getting us off to a great start, getting us toward that match. Four more, and we get an extra $500 thrown in. We can't thank you enough, Marin and Petter. They've been longtime listeners of this program, have they not?
Oh, yeah, and good friends. Marin and Petter, I had the joy of walking their cottage land on Pekegama Lake, and it's been in their family for a long time. I want to say at least 100 years, but it may, if it isn't 100, it's 99. So, yeah, it's an interesting spot. They have a spring. They have all this unique vegetation. I've wandered around in their company and just had the best time. It was very nice, and I'd love to do it again. Petter, if you have a notion, get in touch with me. I would happily walk that piece of land again just because there's so much to discover there. And thank you. Thank you both for your support and for your attention to detail here at KAXE.
We sure appreciate it. We keep going because of you. Members like you who understand that, you know, understanding nature or just paying attention to things, you don't have to know everything, but paying attention like actually does some really good in this world and just makes you feel a little bit more connected. That's what we hear all the time from people. They feel like they're home when they listen to KEXE, and you are home. You're here with us this morning, and we're waiting for your pledge of support. Do it online. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. We've got lots of student phonology up next.
Yeah, and we should probably just jump right in. We've got lots of voices from across the area, people that are watching and observing. You know, that's the amazing thing. You can go into a class of fifth graders, sixth graders. It doesn't really matter. And you explain to them that you don't have to have a degree in some field of science in order to be good at phenology. You just have to engage yourself and be observant. I've seen dragonflies this past week. I have not seen a butterfly, but, you know, I hold out hope that there might be one more. And it's just a matter of, you know, when it goes by, putting your mind on it and going, oh, look, a dragonfly. Oh, look, a butterfly. So, yeah, the kids get that. And once they understand that it's okay for them to talk about these things, to mention them, to observe them and bring them into their classrooms, you really, really begin to see some changes in both in their understanding of nature and in their attention to classroom activities. So without further ado, we're going to start this morning with Lindsay Engel's class at North Star Elementary School in Virginia. And I want to tell you to pay special attention to the notes on the silver maple, because this is not Chris Holmes, who was the teacher there for many, many years. And I had a long time association with our silver maples, and they are back online, and here's what they have to say.
Funding for student phenology provided in part by the Minnesota Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. Our talkback's produced by Charlie Mitchell.
This is Lily,
Autumn,
Clayton,
Dean,
Avery,
Kaylee,
Willow,
Presley,
and Alyssa.
Reporting from North Star Elementary in Virginia, Minnesota on October 16th, 2024.
We have noticed that it's getting darker earlier every day. Some of us were able to see the northern lights in the sky at around 10 o'clock last weekend.
The big silver maples across the street from our school have really turned yellow and are losing a lot of their leaves this week.
The three-year-old needles on the white pines in our schoolyard are turning yellow and falling off.
On October 12th, Presley saw that the crab apples on her dad's tree were starting to fall to the ground.
On October 13th, Gavin saw two swans flying south.
On October 14th, Ben noticed a grouse eating some gravel in his driveway. He also noticed that the tamarack trees in his yard are bright yellow. Riot noticed some near babbitt that are also yellow.
On October 15th, Riot's grandma called to her to tell her she observed four coyotes in a field near her house outside of Bywabit.
That same day, Faith noticed geese flying south. Sometimes they form a V-shape, but at one point they lost their form and made more of an arrow shape.
This has been a report from North Star Elementary in Virginia.
Keep exploring the great outdoors!
Yeah, keep exploring the great outdoors. What a nice report. A couple of interesting things there. First of all, Ben noticing the grouse eating the gravel in his driveway. You know, they've got to have some gravel, and it helps them to grind their food because, hey, birds don't have teeth, right? And Riot noticed that near Babbitt, some of the tamaracks are yellow. And I like this note right here where Riot's grandma called to tell her that she observed four coyotes in a field near her house outside of Bywabik. And the interesting thing there is that, you know, phenology with the kids, I always tell them, you know, get your family involved. You don't have to be the only one looking. And if you tell your grandma or if you tell your sisters and brothers, you know, they can volunteer some observations too. And in this case, Riot's grandma came through. Thank you. What a great report. And the silver maple, yellow and the leaves are falling. That's exactly what's happening to mine. Up to this point, it's been kind of green, and suddenly, poof, it's yellow and the leaves are falling. I'm having to rake a path across the deck to my door because it's 3 inches deep in yellow leaves right now. Our next report comes from Alexandra Lucia's class at Aurora Wasukone Community of Learners in Bemidji.
Hi!
We're Cora and Natalie from the conservation crew here at Aurora Wasukone Community of Learners.
Here are our findings for early October. First, we noticed pine needles dropping onto the back decks and having to sweep them off. On October 3rd, we had our first deep frost, and on the 5th, the leaves started vibrantly changing color. On the 13th and 14th, it was colder during the day, and during the night, it got down to 27 degrees Fahrenheit. The leaves have started falling off of the trees, and we're definitely feeling the cold in our bones.
The woolly bears are also disappearing, and whenever we see them, the orange stripes are smaller. My friend's horses are also getting their winter fur and shedding their summer fur. We think that the 11th was the peak of fall colors for the trees. Also, this past week has been foggy. We've been seeing many turkeys on the roadside and mice coming in buildings and building their nests for winter. We also see migrating birds. Thanks for listening to our phrenology report. This has been Cora and Natalie from AWCL.
Keep observing.
Thank you. Nice report. Great things going on there. I had some cold weather on the same time. I had 25 degrees on the morning of the 16th, and that was the day before the 15th. I had 29, which was my first killing frost. So long growing season this year, longest on record for me, and that definitely did start the leaves to fall. I had gone down to southern Minnesota for the weekend and for the early part of last week, and coming back, my overwhelming observation coming in from McGregor was that the aspen leaves were down. It was lots and lots of bare trees. Good report. Thanks. Looking forward to more. Our next report comes from Angie Nistler's Science and Nature Adventures program at Bemidji Middle School.
Hello, this is Brace from the SNAP Club of Bemidji, Minnesota. We are reporting from Long Lake for our phrenology reports.
Water temperatures are getting colder.
The leaves are changing colors and falling down from the trees. The tamaracks are getting yellow, which are a type of pine tree.
Snap to it! Get into the wild and be observant!
Yeah, snap to it, get into the wild and be observant. Thank you, Angie. You do a great job. It's good to hear your students talking back to us again. We love to hear from you, and we're looking forward to more reports. The leaves definitely are changing colors right now. The primary color that I'm seeing is the bright orange yellow of the big tooth aspens and also the tamaracks. The tamaracks are probably at their peak of color at my house right now. Next, we're going to hear from the students at McGregor Elementary and Rippleside Elementary during their visit to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Haley.
And Isabel
from Rippleside Elementary in Aiken.
And Oliver from McGregor Elementary reporting from Long Lake Conservation Center. We had a high temperature of 59 degrees Fahrenheit and a frosty season low of 21. Brr, lots of leaves are falling as autumn is at its colorful peak. Our group spotted a flock of dark-eyed juncos migrating south and uncovered a very slow-moving blue-spotted salamander under a log in the woods. On Monday, we found a lone Gartner snake that recent sub-freezing temperatures have made them more scarce. They're cold-blooded, so that makes sense. We are still seeing chipmunks.
One of the highlights of the trip was to see the Atlas comet streak across the clear sky during an astronomy class. The last time the comet was seen from Earth was more than 80,000 years ago. We also saw various satellites and the Big Dipper. There were swans on Long Lake. Four were spotted on Tuesday, floating in the morning mist. Joining them were six Canada geese who stopped on their journey south. Abby and Gwendolyn saw a doe on near the compost. It was not wearing its winter coat.
After being out of sight for the summer, blue jays and woodpeckers have returned to campus in big numbers. Most of them will spend the winter here. Male and female hairy and red-bellied woodpeckers were observed. A blue jay and a male red-bellied woodpecker fought over some seeds at the feeder. The blue jay eventually chased the woodpecker away. Their urgency suggests that that food supplies in the forest are getting harder to come by. It's a colorful time to explore nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside,
and live connected.
Thank you very much. Good report. There's a teacher down at McGregor who is active with the seventh graders, getting them started on phenology. And I can't wait to get in touch with her and have that group start to report, because that's an interesting place and it's very close at hand. It's only a few miles down the road. Still seeing a few chipmunks. That was carefully observed by them. And I'm observing a few myself. A blue-spotted salamander, very slowly moving. Yeah, and a garter snake. Both of them probably anxious to begin their wintertime hibernation. And we will put them to bed and see them again next spring. Now, on the other hand, we don't want to put you to bed. We want you to get up and make a call this morning. Call our radio station at